the thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
dope! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome once again to the Computer Corner. A gaggle of data doctors in the house, along with Lewis from Mac Media Inc., here to talk technology with you. Windows, Mac, iPhone, BlackBerry, digital camera, printer, we don't care. If it's technology and you have a question, by goodness, we'll do our best to answer that question for you. It's the purpose of the show. 602-277-5827 is the rusty wire method of communicating with us. Old school, right? Right, Robert? You can say yeah. Right.
Yes, yes.
Go ahead, just pull it down, rip the thing off. Joining me in studio, it is Ken Colburn, the original data doctor, along with Robert Taylor Colburn.
What's up?
Yeah. Data doctor in training. The lead, I mean, you're gonna start focusing in on a new future, kind of future watch segment we'll talk about a little bit later, right?
Yep.
You're gonna bring some really cool stuff to the show every time you're on. Yep. And of course, Lewis from Mac Media here to pull up the wee tiny audience we have that uses Macs, which is getting bigger.
It's growing.
Well, it's not that the Mac group isn't big enough. It's just that I think over the years of us having fun and taunting Mac users, we probably chased a lot of them away.
But the bashing.
We're holding out an olive branch for all of you Mac militants that thought we were taking a little too much fun in that world. Obviously, lots going on in the Mac world. A lot of people out there now that have both a Windows and a Mac machine.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure the listeners feel the love now that you're embracing them.
Well, it's up to you.
Embracing the technology.
Yeah, no, it's all you. The love's got to come from you because I'm still going to take my shots.
It's all there.
602-277-5827 or join us online, datadoctors.com/radio. Therein lies the resources for today's discussion, and the discussion is really more of a part of the edutainment part of the education part of our edutainment mantra to entertain and educate. I think it was Jason last week called in and asked about cloud computing. I thought, you know, that's a pretty good theme. That's something we ought to probably focus in on because I think a lot of people don't realize they have their heads in the clouds right now. And how appropriate on a rainy day, the two rainy days that we have in Phoenix, we're doing cloud computing when there's actually clouds in the sky.
I was just saying that.
Yeah. You couldn't time it better.
It was it was pure coincidence, I assure you. Those of you listening from your car that are in the greater Phoenix area, or as we generally call it, Furnace, Arizona this time of year, but actually it's nice and cool. But as usual, when it rains, Phoenicians have no idea how to drive.
Not at all.
So listen to those traffic reports very closely and try to stay, you know, give yourself a little extra room there, folks. You need it. Anyway, cloud computing. The cloud is, in the early descriptions, technical drawings and diagrams of the internet itself was always represented as a cloud. It's like this big amoebus kind of thing that's in the sky that we all connect to, right? So that's why it got referred to as the cloud very early on. And so cloud computing, in its simplest description, is nothing more than the computing part of what you're doing is actually happening in the cloud. It's not happening on your computer at home. So probably the easiest example I could give you is Gmail, very, very popular mail service. Gmail is a cloud computing application because the processing and computing is actually going on in the cloud, right? It's on Gmail servers, Google servers. It doesn't matter what computer you connect with, which is one of the big benefits of cloud computing is you don't have to have a special configuration. I mean, how many people do we see in our shops that use Outlook Express?
Oh, quite a bit.
Right? And so when they want to have their computer serviced, one of the big things they're freaking out about is I got to have this thing back because I can't check my email. You know, in this day and age, with email being so web-concentric, you know, it's kind of crazy to think that the only way you can get to your email is through that one copy of Outlook Express, but that's the way things have been done for so long. Same thing with AOL users. A lot of AOL users don't realize you can use the AOL software that's, you know, that screws up your machine. Or you can do it 100% in the cloud. If you go to AOL.com and sign in, it's just like the software that you normally install on your computer. And the big benefit to doing that is whenever you sign into AOL.com, it's exactly the same no matter what machine you're on. And so you're limiting the exposure you have to a computer. So if a computer goes down and you're computing in the cloud, your data is still there. You still have access to it. You can just hop over to another computer and pop on in. So that's why I think people don't realize why they gravitate to cloud applications. But we're going to talk in greater detail throughout the show about some really interesting projects going on that could dramatically change how you do your computing down the road. And things like the iPhone. I mean, that is a very powerful little computer.
Yeah, and a lot of those built-in features are cloud type of
correct
apps.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically what you're doing is you don't require that local machine, that local handheld device, the smartphone, to do the processing. You're doing it almost like the old mainframe days where you have dumb terminals. The terminal doesn't know nothing. You're stupid. No, you're dumb. They were called dumb terminals because they had no processing power.
Not a lot under the hood with those.
Yeah. No, it was a screen and some cables, and all of the processing, all of the smart part of the computing process happened on the mainframe itself. It was then referred to as network computing. And so this whole thing of trying to get people to approach their computers and processing and data and what have you in a different way, that's been going on for a long, long time. But now that the internet is so much a part of all of our daily lives and bandwidth, which is the thing that was holding back these previous attempts, the speed in which you can connect to the internet and the amount of information you can shove back and forth was really what was missing in prior years, 10, 12 years ago when they were trying to do this. People didn't have fast enough connections to really be comfortable that they could do and get to what they wanted to. So the cloud is here. Most of you, like I said, you probably don't realize you've been computing in the clouds for a while. And we're going to go through a whole list of services out there that are basically considered to be cloud computing systems. And then, of course, I mean, the real high-tech cloud computing systems are really about big enterprise-type, large companies with 1,000, 10,000 users. There's some tremendous benefits to using the cloud, from deployment, cost of startup, maintenance, you know, upgrading, all that stuff. A lot of that stuff goes away. So we're going to kind of go into detail, but we're going to primarily focus on consumer use of the cloud and then small to medium business. So if you're a small business and you don't really understand how the cloud could be used in your business, you got a great opportunity. So it's a free consultation here on the air. It's the Data Doctors in the House. When we come back, we're also going to discuss a little bit of the dark side of the cloud, because there's a silver lining and there's that dark lining when it comes to cloud computing. So you have to know all these things before you make your decision. It's the Computer Corner. We're talking cloud computing. We'll be back right after this. Cloud computing on the Computer Corner this week. If you don't really have a grasp of the cloud computing model, one of the first links we have for you on our website, datadoctors.com/radio, is a little video, a nice little video that basically explains cloud computing and what the benefits are. It's actually a video that was put together by one of the biggest cloud computing organizations out there that makes 100% of its revenue from people that use their system in the cloud. It's Salesforce.com. It's a very powerful CRM package, customer relations management. Many of you that are in sales have used like ACT or Goldmine, those kinds of things. This is a much more powerful version of that that has a lot of integration, and it's all internet-based. And so Salesforce designs all of the software. They do all the updating. They are responsible for backup. And you simply rent a locker, if you will, on their system and all your data stays in your locker. And so instead of going out and, you know, if you've got an organization of 10 or 12 people and you want a really powerful CRM package, you can go out and buy 10 copies of ACT or a network version of ACT or whatever, install it, put it on a server, get it configured, and then be responsible for all of that and the data backup. Or you can just pay a monthly fee. So you're almost like renting the software. Right? You're never going to own it. You own the data, but the software itself, the system, you're instead of paying a bunch of money up front, you're paying a little bit of money every month. Now, there's pros and cons to that. Obviously, if you pay for it all up front, you have a defined cost, and once you get past a certain point, then there's no more cost because it's kind of been amortized out. Whereas if you use a cloud model, it's forever. You're going to make that payment forever.
It almost seems like a leasing option in a way.
But leases have a defined end.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
With cloud computing, most of them don't. Now, what the cool thing about Gmail as a cloud computing system is it's free. Okay, so not all cloud computing models require you to pay. Most of them do that have this, you know, extreme power. Google's got other reasons for allowing people to use their very powerful email system for free. But again, if you have a small company, you use Gmail's mail system instead of setting up an Exchange server and how to manage that. I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot of complexity and cost up front. So keep those things in mind. 602-277-5827 is the helpline. You don't have to be calling in about cloud computing. You can be calling in about broken screens on Blackberries like Justin. Justin, hey. You're first up.
Hey, I have a question. I dropped my phone in about maybe half an inch of soda. And it will not, the phone works fine, but the screen, you have to hold a flashlight to the screen to see it. You can see that the phone's working. Is there any way to fix that light on the screen to get it to work again?
There's always a way of fixing this stuff, right? The question becomes, is it cost effective?
Yeah, can I do it?
Yeah, well, can you do it is, you know, it's one of those questions. The fact that you're asking, there's probably a very high likelihood that you can't because you're asking. You're dealing with electronic components. So first of all, you're going to have to know how to take the BlackBerry apart, which, by the way, you've heard of the internet, right?
Yeah.
Okay, forget about Google. There's this really cool website for people in your situation that have to figure out, can I fix this? Do I want to try doing this myself?
Okay.
You ever thought about using YouTube as a resource? If you go to YouTube and type in broken BlackBerry screen, you will see more videos specific to a model number of a BlackBerry that talk about this is how you do it, and they actually videotape it and put it up there step by step. So if you're a do-it-yourselfer and you like taking stuff apart and you feel comfortable doing it, or if you're kind of on the fringe and you're not really sure if you can do it, that's a good way to go look to see somebody else doing what you think you're going to try to do. So that you can make a determination, am I up to this or not?
Okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to save the $150. So.
Yeah, unfortunately, in that case, I thought it was a broken screen, like you cracked it. That's a much easier deal than, hang on, you know, it just dawned on me. You said you dropped this in about a half an inch of soda?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
I was reaching up to turn my stereo down and make a phone call. The phone was in my hand, and I had an open cup right there.
It must have been a big cup, right?
Well, it's one of them Taco Bell cups.
Another reason not to use bladder busters when you go out and get your sodas.
Exactly. Well, it fell just perfect where it fell right in there. So.
You know, when that kind of thing happens, you got to look at it and go, that was just meant to be. There's some learning lesson in this. There's some, you know, maybe you're going to start a new career as a BlackBerry repairman because of this.
I hope not. But work phone, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the issue is unfortunately, the labor involved in these micro devices. You know, if this was an iPhone, you got a guy right here that routinely works on that stuff, right?
Yeah, we fix them all the time.
Yeah, Mac Media, any of you folks out there that have those cracked iPhones and you're going, I don't want to pay Apple that ridiculous amount of money. I know you guys do it significantly cheaper than what Apple charges to replace them, right?
Well, the other thing people don't think about is the contracts that they have with their phones. So a lot of people think, I'm going to go out and buy a new phone. And then they realize that, wait, this $200 phone is now $500, $600.
Right, because unless you re-up for another 2 years and all that good stuff.
Exactly.
But Justin, that's what I would suggest. Check out YouTube to see if you think you can pull off what they show you how to do. And see if that can provide you with some comfort or scare you the heck out of even trying it. So And remember that for anybody out there that wants to get into a mechanical repair, not just in technology, not in anything. You want to take apart your garbage disposal? YouTube, baby!
It's amazing. I learned how to do my transmission fluid on that.
Yeah, people post take aparts on everything.
Everything. Yep, everything. 602-277-5827. Couple lines open. Or join us online, datadoctors.com/radio, and you can click on the Ask a Question button. Lots more coming on cloud computing, and of course later on our Geek Speak of the Week and Taylor's Future Watch. Stay tuned for more. Are you part of the Twitterati? The Twitter universe? Are you one of the tweeps out there? You can join us online as well and on Twitter by following the Data Doc, which would be me. You can go ahead and shoot some questions via a tweet if you'd like as well. We're talking about cloud computing. We're talking about whatever it is you want to talk about. And we got a couple lines open at 602-277-5827. We talked about the dark side of cloud computing. There are some, you know, there's pros and cons, which, by the way, is the second link of the resources on our website, datadoctors.com/radio. Wow. Not enough sugar, I guess. The pros and cons are discussed in my advice column, which will also be in tomorrow's Tribune paper. The downside to cloud computing is that your information, your data, does reside on somebody else's computers. You know, when you're using Gmail and you're passing pictures and you're exchanging information with your friends and family, all that information resides on Google's servers. Now, does that mean Google's in there snooping around? No, but it is on somebody else's computers that you don't really have any control over how things get handled and managed. Obviously, if the site gets hacked, then you're exposed to that. And I think a lot of people have this misnomer in businesses, wouldn't you say, with security, in that, oh, no, if it's on the internet, it's not secure. I want it on my network. Folks, any of you business people that think you have a secure network because you control everything, I could probably scare the heck out of you in about 10, 15 minutes and show you how exposed you are and how unsecure your network is. So don't assume that cloud computing is less secure. It's just it's got different security issues than if you have everything on your private network. I think people can get a comfort level and a grasp around having everything's here in my building. Whereas cloud computing, it's like it's out there and I don't understand it. I don't know who's got it. I don't understand it, so I don't want to do it. So it's not necessarily good or bad. It's just you need to be aware of it. In the case of Gmail, I hate to tell you, folks, if you're worried about what Google knows about you, Let me open your eyes a little bit. Google knows more about you than probably most of your friends and family. They know your innermost thoughts. They know your tendencies. They know your hobbies. They know all. You know how they know these things? Every search you've ever done on Google from your home, that's a record of that, not a person, but a user of a profile of that particular IP address. And it's just the cold hard facts. It's like Facebook. The Facebook people have all that information people are talking about that's kind of private, and that's a cloud computing system, right? All that information is on Facebook's servers. So a lot of you are already using cloud computing, and you are enjoying it very much because you didn't have to buy software. You didn't have to install software. You don't have to update it. You don't have to, buy new versions of it and go through that whole mess. You don't have to back up the data, all that good stuff. But the security and privacy. Remember when Twitter got attacked? The Russian guy, right? And it brought the whole Twitter system down, right? Fortunately, not too many people make their living on Twitter. But if you did, you're basically out of business. If you run your business off of a cloud computing system, and Gmail's been down. I mean, it was just down the other day, right? For like an hour. So if you run your business on a cloud computing environment, and that's the only place where the information resides, the downside is if you, A, lose your internet connection, B, you don't have access to the internet for, whatever, traveling, or C, whoever is hosting it gets attacked, is overloaded, whatever happened. Twitter fell apart because, not because of the denial of service attack was designed to bring them down. they were teetering on the edge of trying to deal with 20 or 30 million people already.
Yeah, they're already having those issues when you logged in and it said, hey, we have got too many people in here, and they had the little birds flying.
That's the fail whale.
The fail whale.
Yes.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah. And then Gmail became Gfail, right? So these things are going to happen in cloud computing environments. So if you rely heavily on it and you got to have 100% uptime, it's one of the considerations you have to have. I don't think most people that use Gmail, if it's down for an hour, it's going to kill them, right? So that works. But if you're using QuickBooks online instead of the QuickBooks program that you install and your internet connection goes down or something happens with Intuit's servers, you're not allowed, you can't do any accounting, you can't do any bookwork for your business. Now, can you live without that for an hour or two or even a day? If the answer is yes, then it's probably okay. If you're saying, no, I have to have 100% uptime and I got to have control of this and I got to have access to my data all the time, 24/7, then the cloud may not be your answer. So those are some of the things you want to kind of go through. Again, if you're interested in really understanding this, we've tried to post as many resources as we can. And later on in the show, we're going to talk about the gaming world could get turned on its ear by cloud computing. So we're going to talk about that and show you how that works. Let's go back to the phones here. Again, 602-277-5827. Bruce, you have a tower of power.
I have a tower of no power.
Oh, yeah, tower no power. By the way, those of you out there that are Tower of Power fans, they're going to be a celebrity theater here pretty soon. So, no, I'm sorry.
They're already outdated, aren't they?
What's that?
The towers.
No.
No?
No, I don't. I got towers all over my house.
Okay.
Well, when you say tower, are you talking about something from 1965 that's like 3.5 feet tall?
No, it's only about 7 years old.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. But anyhow, what happened is that my screen will light up and it'll say Windows, XP, and all that, and it starts doing its thing, and the computer's on for about a minute to a minute and a half, and then the computer shuts off. The green light stays on, but the yellow light goes out, and it quits. I mean, I can hear the fan go off, all of that. Somebody told me motherboard. I'm not a computer guy. I'm calling for help.
Well, it could be motherboard. It could be power supply. It could be a video card. I had a good friend this past week who had this real strange thing, and the assumption without really going into the detail was that it was the motherboard, and it turned out to be the video card. And the first assumption also was that it was a power supply. So this is a situation. The unfortunate part is a seven-year-old machine. I'm really not sure how much, you know, time or money you want to spend on trying to resurrect it. So if it's something simple like a power supply and you are comfortable replacing it yourself, great.
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that. I would take it into the store over on Camelback.
I mean, and you can do that, and they can either do a complete physical for you and tell you exactly what it is and then tell you what it's going to cost to fix it so that you can make a decision, or you can say, you know what, let's not spend any money on this thing. It's 7 years old. That's in computer years, that's like 28 years, right?
Because there's four
cycles per calendar year in my calculation. So, you know, and it's not going to be able to run any of the new software. It's got, you know, at some point you're going to be forced to get a new machine. And you might be looking at that now. It might be the most
cost effective
and also most intelligent thing to do, because if it's 7 years old, what operating system is it running?
Windows XP.
Okay. So
home,
at least you're,
home edition.
Yeah, so you're, at least you're on an operating system that's still supported, but pretty soon Windows XP's support is going to start to drop off, right?
Because I'm sure.
Windows 7 is coming out in October, so you know, maybe now's the time. And in fact, just since we're on this, Windows 7 is significantly better than Windows Vista in every test that I've seen and every test that we've done. So if you do end up looking at a new computer, and this is anybody out there looking at a new computer, right now you don't have a choice but to buy a Vista machine. Make absolutely sure you're getting some form of upgrade. Usually, like our suppliers are giving us upgrade coupons for our customers so that you can get a free upgrade to Windows 7 when it comes out.
Okay.
Because you can't go from Windows XP to Windows 7 without wiping everything out and starting over again, or upgrading the Windows XP to Vista and then from Vista to 7.
Yeah.
Okay, so you may be, because of all the things that are going on in the world of operating systems, because of the age of the machine, you know, again, that's a decision you have to make. One of the ways that we try to make this easier for you is that, you know, we have a basic diagnostic fee to really get into the thing and give it what we call a physical, right?
Right.
And if it turns out that it's going to take too much to fix it, that money we apply whatever you've paid. Well, it's like a gift card. You can use it towards anything else in our store, like a new computer or whatever.
Oh, okay.
So you can, you know, it's a little easier way for you to really get all the facts first and then make a decision instead of having to make a decision without really understanding what's going on. So
yeah, good. Well, a couple of years ago, my wife's machine was considerably newer, or is considerably newer than that, mine, probably only 3 years old at that point. But it slowed down. It got a virus. And somehow or another, and so took it over to people over on Calvac, and they went through it and cleaned it up for us, and they did a nice job. I was pleased.
Great, so. Good to hear. I mean, these folks represent me for my 20 years worth of work in this thing, and it's always good to know that they're doing a good job.
Yeah, they are.
Great.
They did, so.
All right,
that's what I'm going to do, and I appreciate the help.
No problem. Now, is everything on that machine backed up?
No, it is not.
Okay, so that's another thing that you want to make them aware of. One of the things we're going to do is our mission statement at Data Doctors is people and data before technology. That computer really does not matter. If you think about it, that computer means nothing to you, the physical computer.
Right.
What you care about is the data.
Exactly.
Okay, so
exactly.
We stay focused on you first, then your data, then the box is, you know, way back there.
Okay.
So understanding that, one of the things they're going to do is make sure that everything's cool, that there's not something going on there. And then if you do end up doing buying a new computer or whatever from us, one of the things that we include in there is we'll get all that stuff transferred off onto the new computer for you so you don't have to figure that out on your own.
Oh, yeah, good.
You know, make it so that you basically just get back to computing instead of trying to figure out how to be a tech for 2 weeks.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, based on what your needs are, they'll kind of put together something for you. But give that a shot.
All right, I'm going to go over Monday and see him.
No, let's not make it Monday.
Oh, let's not do Monday, right.
Well, you can, and I appreciate you sitting out there for a day, but yeah, maybe Tuesday's better.
Tuesday's good, yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruce.
It.
All right, take care of that tower power.
All right, I will.
All right, bye-bye.
So you were talking about cloud computing downtime. I mean, that can happen without cloud computing,
sure.
Too.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And there's cost of maintenance on a network or on a server system. Per month.
So
I mean, you got to service it.
And the future of cloud computing is very interesting. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some stuff. Taylor's little Future Watch segment. We're going to talk about some interesting technology that's out there that you might have heard about, maybe not. It's the Future Watch segment from Taylor Colburn, back right after this. Goom, goom, ack-a-lack-a-lack-a, goom. Goom, goom, ack-a-lack-a-goom-ba. Goom, goom, ack-a-lack-a-lack-a-goom. Goom, goom, ack-a-lack-a-goom-ba. Goom, goom, ack-a-lack-a-lack-a-goom. This is Pete's Future Watch music for you, Taylor.
Thanks, Pete.
I think maybe he's saying your Future Watch segment may be a little prehistoric.
Yeah, he's trying to say something.
It's the Computer Corner. We are talking cloud computing, amongst other things. Join us online, datadoctors.com/radio, or via the phone, 602-277-5827. But for now, we're going to go to the Future Watch segment that Taylor's going to bring whenever he graces our presence, right?
Right.
You love all this crazy stuff that's going on. You're constantly bringing these things going, Dad, check this out.
It's ridiculous.
It is.
It's many things.
Totally ridiculous.
In fact, I'm actually like 7 months ahead of the Science Channel.
I know that. The stuff
right.
that you showed me 7 months ago, they're just now covering on the Science Channel.
Right. The Popular Science Future
yeah.
of
you're,
show.
You're so far ahead of it.
Yeah.
So, what do you want to talk about today that the fine people might be interested in?
Well, I actually found this one in, I do believe, ninth grade. It was freshman year in my science class, and it was back when it was way, way, like, prototype.
Really
like, way,
early?
Way back into when it was just in the stage before they even had a real prototype.
It was like
prototype.
On paper, right?
Right,
it was like,
exactly.
We can do this on paper.
They had the idea, and it was in a science magazine.
And what idea was
about
this?
It. And it's wireless electricity, or Wi-tricity, which the MIT students who developed it have. I think it's MIT, I do believe. That's what they've coined the phrase as. And essentially, it's this big, complicated science thing of magnetic resonant... Or not magnetic, I'm sorry.
Don't get technical now.
Yeah. Resonant frequencies and coils and energy. It's big, confusing, crazy stuff, and they try to explain it on their website, and it's ridiculous.
The difference between this and some of the other things we've talked about is it's not one of these things where you have these special components and you actually have to lay them on a pad or something. You're literally,
wireless.
When you walk within range of these devices, or in a room that's got one of these systems in it, it's recharging whatever it is, right? It's powering.
Right.
Or are they going to be able to use real time? It's not just for recharging. It's actually for powering up a unit.
Exactly. Actually, one of the things they showed is the second prototype they have now, because they actually have investors. There are two boxes, one that you plug into the wall over here, and it's fairly small, not like the size of a phone, probably more like the size of a laptop. And then there's another one that is on top of the desk near the TV right now that they have plugged in. What they're trying to do is make that smaller and smaller and smaller so it can fit inside the TV. But essentially, there's nothing there.
So the TV, right now the TV's plugged into the prototype receiver,
right,
if you will. Okay.
And so there's the receiver and the sender, and they're close to each other, and it's creating, you know.
And you can walk between them and not get zapped?
Yeah, he puts his hand in between, he walks in between them, there's a good, 5 feet between the two of them, and he turns the TV on, and it's an HD TV playing a Blu-ray movie.
So you got wireless video we were talking about, right, Robert?
Yeah, we were talking about wireless video.
So they can transmit high-definition video wirelessly, they can transmit electricity wirelessly, right?
Imagine walking into your room and all of a sudden every electronic you have in your pocket and your hand starts charging itself.
Well, it'd be nice because I wouldn't have to remember to charge my cell phone.
Exactly.
No,
I do that all the time. I'm half asleep. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, oh, I need to plug in my phone.
Forgot.
So stumble over.
Right.
It's a safety hazard. I'll trip over my guitar.
This is insane. I mean, you're talking about wireless everything, pretty much at that point.
Does your guitar gently weep by any chance?
No.
Okay. Wytricity is the name of the... Sorry, I couldn't help it. I've seen your guitar. It should be.
Yeah, it's not taken care of.
Wytricity is the name of the project, and it's a link on our website, datadoctors.com/radio. So if you're a future watcher, you like this kind of thing, Taylor, whenever he graces his presence, or graces us with his presence, will bring some kind of future watch device or website or some sophistication. Maybe we'll go back to Sixth Sense and some of these others that we've talked about, huh?
Yeah.
Awesome. 602-277-5827 is the phone number. We're about to go to break here. We got another hour to go. When we come back, we're going to talk about this very interesting prototype for cloud gaming. Any of you that are into gaming, you realize if you really want a really good, rich gaming experience, you got to spend a lot of money on fast processors, really, really elaborate video cards, great displays, all this stuff to be able to get the performance you want so that you can play online and get these realistic looking video replication and the frames per second's fast enough, all that stuff. How about going to a netbook and using any old browser and having the same capability? Could be possible. We're going to talk about that when we come back. It's cloud computing. Of course, if you have a Windows or a Mac question, we got you covered. Lewis from Mac Media here in with the Data Doctors. 602-277-5827. Or again, join us online, datadoctors.com/radio. And while you're there, sign up for our newsletter so we can keep you posted on everything that's going on in our world. Pick and choose what you like there. Hour number two of the Computer Corner coming up right after this.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode.
Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
don't! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome to hour number two of the Computer Corner. We're talking about cloud computing. What the heck is it? Well, join us online, datadoctors.com/radio, and look at the resources. The very first resource posted in this week's links answers that question via video. A very interesting, very simple video description of what cloud computing is all about. Most of you out there, as we speak, are heavily engaged in cloud computing in one form or another, in that you are relying on something in the cloud, and the cloud is a reference to the internet, to host and process whatever it is you're doing. So photo sharing systems where you can create these elaborate picture books and what have you. You're doing all the processing on the host side, or the whoever's kind of like, if you're using Shutterfly, Those are Shutterfly servers. Your pictures exist on their servers. When you tell it you want to create a blue background, it's using their server's processors. You're just using a web browser to access the processing power at their facility. And so in its simplest form, that is basically what this cloud computing is. So we're going to talk some more about those various things, as well as I want to follow back up on that BlackBerry call, the one that we started the show with. I had a discussion with the gentleman off the air, and Don, who's listening to us and giving me guidance through Twitter, reminded me that we need to have the discussion about what people should do when they drop their electronics in liquid. Very important. But for now, it's time for the Geek Speak of the Week. It's a portion of the show where we try to bring a new term, a new little morsel of the vernacular of tech. And since we're talking about cloud computing this week, what is the Geek Speak of the Week, Robert?
Geek Speak of the Week is Cloudburst.
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 That's got a couple of different meanings, doesn't it?
Yes, it has a negative meaning, which is the failure of cloud computing environments from an overload of demand, so like Twitter or Gmail.
Yeah, well, we talked about these outages when the thing went down. That was a cloudburst.
That was a cloudburst. Okay.
Now, there are actually companies like IBM using the term cloudburst in a positive way. What are they using that for?
Well, the use of cloud to handle a spike internal applications that overload the local resources.
So like if you've got a big network and you suddenly need more processing power and more storage space, more that kind of thing, cloud bursting applications will allow you to almost real time just reach out to the cloud, if you will, the internet, for those additional resources without having, so it helps to cover those demands and spike you have on your local network. It's a very interesting concept that they're talking about providing businesses with, and you know, for large businesses, us little guys, we're not going to need those cloud bursting apps. But so when you hear cloud burst, now you know it's got a positive connotation and a negative connotation. Hopefully, whenever you're discussing or saying, "I just went through a cloud burst scenario," it's because you had a positive experience and not a negative. But cloud bursts are one of the reasons why you have to be really careful about what you decide to put on the cloud there. One of the links I have up on the website now is towards the bottom there. And by the way, the negative connotations of cloud computing, the good, bad, the ugly, the privacy groups that all have concerns, those links are on there as well. So, and another link that's on there is a lot of people probably don't realize, your netbooks, right? They are made to be used primarily to access things on the internet. Well, the popularity of these netbooks clearly is providing the application providers, people that write programs, to say, hey, let's create netbook-specific applications, right? So people are obviously interested in computing in the clouds.
Well, especially since a lot of these don't come with CD-ROMs.
Right.
And a lot of people, if you tell them they have to install something off the internet, they get a little confused.
Well, the other thing is there's not, I mean, that processor in a netbook is like a little hamster cage, right? It's just barely getting out of its own way.
Sure. Very weak.
If all it has to do is generate a browser and work with the TCP connection, all the stuff going back and forth across the internet, that's a fairly simple process to manage. And so then again, all the processing power occurs at the host site, whether it's Gmail or Yahoo Mail or these photo sharing sites. You know, I mean, video processing to a certain extent, YouTube is providing that. When you upload the video, there's a whole lot of stuff going on in the background that eliminates your need to know how to do this stuff.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I noticed too with some of these cloud sites, or you know, Facebook and YouTube and places like that, is some of those videos, because of the HD quality that they're streaming, it actually taxes the processor even on computers that aren't netbooks.
Some
of the older ones.
If the code's not optimized and it really basically takes over the browser and it says, I need everything you got.
Yeah, so if you're watching a video and it staggers, it may not necessarily mean you have a problem with your computer. It may just be too old to run it.
Or your internet connection's not quite as big as you thought.
Right.
The analogy I use when you're buffering video, it's like a really thick milkshake and somebody hands you a coffee straw. You'll get some stuff. It's going to hurt. All right, let's go back to the phones here. We actually have a Mac question for the Mac wizard here from Mac Media Inc. Lewis, Mark's on the phone on the line here and wants to know, you have a G3 at the moment, Mark?
Hello. Hi, guys. Hey, Lewis.
Hello.
So, yeah, I'm the one out of 100 that's going to call in about his Macintosh.
That's okay. We'll take it.
It only takes one.
So you have
So I bought this Macintosh used. It's a G3.
Okay.
But I bought it around 2002, and I wanted to learn what's the Macintosh OS X system like. Well, I like it. I actually like the OS X system, so I'm going to upgrade and stay with the Macintosh operating system.
Sure. So which G3 model do you currently have?
It's a laptop. It's a PowerBook. And talking about video, boy, can you tell when you have to upgrade? I can't ever look at video on that thing.
No, yeah. It
just doesn't have any
You can hear the audio, but the video's not doing a thing.
Hey, Mark, so, did you not find the little hand crank on the side?
Well, it's not that old, but it is kind of old. So, yeah, well, testimony to their build. I mean, at least it lasts a long
time. Sure, no, absolutely. So you want to know what's next for you?
Well, what I wanted to do is I went into a shop and a computer store and I looked at a G5, which is still old technology nowadays, and I did a few things like what I would do, and it ran fine. I think I put on iTunes and I ran a visualizer in one window, and I. You know, my visualizer runs at a really slow rate. That's the, you know, the pretty little, the psychedelics that you can see when you're playing music.
Sure, sure.
So the visualizer was running at a normal pace on that G5, and then I went to a website and did something at a website. Probably.
So what do you? What do you? Just so we can, just so we don't run out of time, Mark. What is it?
It was fine for me. That G5 looked just fine.
Yeah, a G5 processor is going to be ample for running any of the current applications.
Yeah, then that's the problem if you're buying for current or future.
Yeah, the thing you want to think about though is the new operating system Snow Leopard came out about a week ago, and if you're thinking about running the new operating system, it only works on Intel processors. So any of those G5.
I was asking about this is because there's a couple engineering type and analysis programs I want to run, which only run on the PC systems.
Okay, and on any of the Intel systems, you can also run dual operating systems.
Right, and that was my question. Really? So is that the way to go, and is it that efficient that you don't have to have a second computer?
No, it's very efficient. There's a couple different ways to run it, and you can do boot camp, you can run VMware, you can run Parallels.
I think Parallels is the bomb. Right?
I like running it that way because I like to be able to use the windowed mode and go back and forth from one operating system to another.
Why don't you explain
is
real
Parallel
quick?
A piece of software?
It is a piece of software.
But hang
are
on,
you
let,
also
let, let,
buying
let's
the
explain.
Software?
Hang on, let's explain. Yeah, of course, you can't get it for free.
That's what I thought.
But let's explain the difference between boot camp and Parallels because it's very significant.
Okay, the difference between boot camp and Parallels is kind of like a virtual world.
You know what? Hang on. Hold that breath. I'm way late for a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the difference between boot camp and Parallels, which is very important, especially for those of you interested in using Mac and Windows operating systems on the same machine. Back right after this. Hey, and welcome back to the Computer Corner. Earlier in the show, actually, we started the show off with a discussion with a gentleman that somehow miraculously dropped his BlackBerry into 2 inches of soda.
Jeez.
Which, if you visualize that, he had to have one of those big, he said it was a Taco Bell cup, so it must have been a bladder buster, right? Just happened to fall perfectly into this. This is going to happen from time to time. When it comes to electronics, there's a key thing that folks need to understand. And I appreciate it, Don, for reminding me to have this discussion on the air. You have to understand that the liquids basically are very good at conducting electricity. So, if it gets wet, first thing you want to do is turn it off. The second thing you want to do is make sure you do not turn it back on until you've done everything you can to ensure that those liquids have been removed, evaporated, whatever. Because if there's still water droplets, if there's still soda on the circuit boards, and you power that guy up, basically it could short circuit all kinds of things, right? Create shorts across the boards all over the place. And so that's the key part. And I think a lot of people get very lucky. They turn them on while the things are still wet and still going nuts and the display on the phone's going crazy. They let it sit for a day or two, and then they come back to it, especially if it was water. Everything's evaporated, and it actually works again. You got lucky.
So if you drop it in soda, You could maybe rinse it off with water if it's off to get the soda out.
You know what? I don't even want to go into those kinds of details because there's so many other things.
The problem with that would be like the salt, because water's not a conductor unless it's got salt in it. So the electricity won't go through and fry everything in the water.
Isn't the thing on the internet that goes around, everybody takes their phone and they stick it in a cup of rice? And it sucks.
So like suck in the water.
Yeah. In fact, Don was just he sent me a link from the BlackBerry FAQ site that basically talks about if you get your BlackBerry wet, what should you do? So I'm gonna post that up on our website again. Don, thanks for gonna make Don our executive producer, huh? He's providing some serious value to us.
Some good content.
All right, before we went to break, boot camp and parallels are two different ways that somebody that wants to run both the Mac operating system and a Windows operating system on the same computer, those are two different ways, two different options you have for doing that. What's the difference between boot camp and parallels?
Well, with boot camp, you're restarting the computer every time you want to use the Windows environment. When you're using parallels, you're running both operating systems simultaneously. So boot camp is essentially creating a partition, installing the OS on that partition, and then utilizing that partition when you're booted off of it. And then if you're going with the parallels world, it's kind of it's a virtual OS, so it's kept in basically a folder, and you can run both those operating systems simultaneously so that you don't have that wait time from going from one system to another.
And so there's a couple of distinctions there, right? One, the install process is about the same as far as complication level, right?
Sure.
About the same. What's different is once you get it installed, with boot camps, you have to, before you start your machine, go, okay, what do I want to be right now? Right? You got to decide. And if you go, okay, now I want to go to the other one, shut everything down, restart. So from a timing standpoint, especially if you're like a web developer or something, that's kind of insane. Parallels, you hit a couple of keystrokes.
You're ready to go.
And it's got this little cool video, visual, right, where it kind of flips around. And
yeah, well, they have a thing called coherence mode as well. So what it does is it takes that Windows start menu and it kind of makes it transparent. And so it doesn't look like the Windows operating system is running, but you could launch Internet Explorer and you'll see Internet Explorer open, but you still see everything in the Mac background.
So it's quite a bit more flexible, right?
Sure.
And this partitioning issue, you don't have to decide up front, I'm gonna apportion this much to Windows and this much to the Mac OS, right?
Because it's scalable.
Correct. So you don't have to make that decision up front like you do with boot camp, right?
Yes.
Because if you're going to create a partition, you got to decide how large that partition is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of limitations, I think, with the boot camp side of things, whereas Parallels, it kind of automates all those tasks for you.
Well, and if you're wondering whether we condone the use of Mac PowerBooks running both operating systems, a young man by the name of Brandon Disney, actually, uses that as his primary road system, right? He's got a Mac PowerBook that's got both Windows, I think it's a Windows XP or Windows Vista and the Mac OS on it.
Yeah.
It works great. So if that's something you're considering out there, check that out. We got another half an hour to go. We got lots more to talk about, including what should I do to upgrade to Windows 7, some other cloud issues like we're talking about gaming. If you're a gamer, we're going to talk about something that may really pique your interest in cloud computing and save you big, 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 big dollars. It's the Computer Corner. We're talking cloud computing. 602-277-5827 is your hotline. And thanks for joining us here on the Computer Corner every Saturday afternoon from noon to 2, Arizona time at least. If you like what you hear on the show and you want to get more of that in your inbox, it's absolutely free. It's our weekly newsletter. You go to datadoctors.com/help. There you can see about 10 years worth of advice columns. You can see tips and tricks, and you can see a place where you can sign up for our newsletter. Last night's newsletter included a really cool tip. It's a website called Alternative 2. And it's basically a website where everybody can say, you know what, I'm looking for, or if you're looking for an alternative to Adobe's Photoshop, here are all the different programs. If you're looking for an alternative to Microsoft Excel, here are a bunch of different programs. And it's kind of a blog form, so everybody can, the community can kind of continue to contribute and build this database. Really good. If you're really into social media, tip number two, it's our head whack of the week, actually, is I think a lot of people now, even if you only do Twitter, Facebook, and maybe LinkedIn, you know, and then Flickr and some of these others, you have to open up those different applications or web browser sessions or what have you, you can actually consolidate them now. There's a website called Gizapage that allows you, it has like 45 or 50 different social media sites that they can actually pin to a dashboard. So you can have them all right there. So you just open up that one application and boom. And then you can use that to, if you're doing it for business purposes, you can say, here are all the ways you can interact with me through social media. In other words, you don't have to send somebody, here's my Twitter link, here's my Facebook link, here's my LinkedIn link. Just send them one location on Gizapage, and then every possible social media that you want to connect with them on, it's right there. So it's stuff like that at our Geek Speak of the Week, and a preview of the radio show, and a link to last week's CNN.com segment that we do on Wednesdays. It's the kind of stuff you'll see there. And if you want to see past editions, you can do that there at datadoctors.com/help. Look at the archives and decide whether it's something you want to sign up for or not. John emailed in and asked, he says, I have an upgrade copy of Vista 7 coming on or about 10/22. And actually, we're going to have the same thing that always happens. Vista and Windows 7 are two different programs, John. So it's not Vista 7. It is Windows 7. And Vista is your old, your current operating system. This question is, do you have any thoughts concerning the debate of doing the installation on top of my Vista or doing a clean installation from scratch? P.S. I have image backups that are done from scratch weekly, and I updated via incremental backup twice daily using Shadow Protect Desktop. So John actually is the one guy out of a million that actually backs up. And how do we know that people don't back up? It's our data recovery lab.
I was going to say, because you're still in business.
Every day.
Daily phone calls.
The lab, yeah. It's like, you know, you can avoid this very expensive thing if you just back up. John, all of our tests have proven to be very, very good from the standpoint of just slapping the Windows 7 CD in, or DVDs actually, and doing what's called an in-place upgrade. In-place upgrades from Vista to Windows 7 seem to be going very smoothly. There is no, for those of you, and we've talked about this in past shows and also past advice columns, if you have Windows XP, unfortunately, there's no clear path to Windows 7 without either wiping the drive or doing a double upgrade. Maybe once it's out, we'll start to see some hacks and things out there. But for now, that's pretty much the way it is. So, John, you should be fine. Now, what I would suggest you do is, just because you get that Windows 7 upgrade CD on October 22nd or thereabouts, and you feel really, really good about doing those things, listen to the show before you jump in there just to make sure, because that first tranche of people that are going to do the upgrades, let them kind of pave the way and show you where all the problems are in the upgrade path.
Let someone else be the guinea pig.
Exactly. Joining us now online, Grace, who wants to know something about Wi-Fi.
Yeah, okay. Hi, guys. I love you. I'm your number one fan.
You know what? We love you, too.
I really do. I've learned so much, but I still haven't learned enough to fix this computer.
That's okay. I'm in the business 21 years. I'm still learning.
Yay. Okay, it's a brand new laptop, and what happens is I sat at a coffee shop called Lux for like 3 hours I see that it's connecting to the Wi-Fi.
Yes.
But I can't do it myself. So then I asked some guy that looked like he knew computers.
Yeah.
I said, I see the connection right here, but I can't bring the internet up. He sits down, hits on these bars at the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And then they say, view available internet connections.
Yes.
And he got a list of available internet connections. But when I hit that, that's not what I got.
Hmm.
So now I don't know how to do it again.
Was this guy worth hanging out with a lot?
I wish. He was married. I'm always on the hunt. Don't get me started.
All right. You know what? We'll save that one for another show, huh, Grace?
Yeah.
Okay. Generally speaking, what it sounds like you're talking about is the little indicator for, now, there's two different ways to do this. Windows has its own little Wi-Fi indicator.
Okay.
And it's like a picture of a computer monitor, and it looks like these radio waves are coming out of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the one from Windows. Depending upon what laptop you have and what wireless adapter is in there, there's also a possibility that a third-party application has been installed to manage your wireless connection.
That's what's happened.
Okay, so
the first option you gave me, that always shows that I'm not connected.
Okay, and it probably is because this other program has kind of told Windows, step aside, I got this.
Right.
So the way you can figure out which one of those little icons is the one that helps you with the wireless, is just take your mouse and just kind of float them over the pictures and just leave them there for a second. And then what's called smart icons will come up, or the smart icon descriptions will come up, the little yellow banner with the black text that tells you what that icon is. And so you just would continue to go through, and you may have to click on that little chevron, that little left pointing arrow to show all of the little icons.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about, down by the clock.
Yeah, I've done all this, but I'm not explaining it well to you what's wrong. I knew it was going to be difficult because I've done what you said, but I follow it. It says click on this. I click on this, and then it brings up all the internet connections, and it says view available. Do you know where how to get to view available internet connections?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's two different ways to do that. The one that's built into Windows, because I can't see your machine, I don't know which wireless agent is actually controlling your wireless connections.
Yeah.
But anything down there that looks like the wireless, when you double click on it, then that particular software program will show you the list if it's the one that's in charge of your wireless connection. If you're pulling it up and every time it comes up and says there's nothing there, that would lead me to believe, based on those symptoms, that that's the wrong program.
Okay.
There's a second program. That's what I'm saying. You have to go through and look at those icons real close to figure out what that is. The other option you have is open up your programs, you know, the start all programs.
Right.
And then look through the list and see if something in there has some clear label on there that talks about, like, Linksys or Wi-Fi or wireless or that kind of thing that's outside of Windows.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Okay, and that'll tell you if you've got a third-party application that's controlling it, because that controller software will be accessible through that process as well. If you want to get really technical,
I'm listening.
You can open up your My Computer window, right?
Okay.
And then on the left side, you should see other places. One of them should be Network Places, My Network Places.
That's what I usually do.
Okay, but hang on. And we got to go one further.
Okay.
And look at View Network Connections.
That one, yeah.
Okay, if you do that one, then it'll show you all the hardware that you have installed on your computer.
Uh-huh.
And then if you and the ones that are wireless, the wireless adapter should be pretty obvious to you. And then you can right-click on that and say, show me the wireless connections available.
Okay.
But that's a lot of work.
It's a lot of steps, Ken.
And usually, this is what, Windows XP?
Uh-huh.
Okay, usually what happens is the one time, so what you want to do is kind of stalk this guy if he comes into the coffee shop again, because the one time that he does get it to connect, he should be able to tell it, basically, make this a priority, make this happen again the next time I come in here, and then you won't have to do anything. Your machine will go, oh, okay, I remember this one.
Okay.
Make sense?
I have also made the mistake doing all this advanced stuff, and all I'd forgotten to do was turn in the wireless switch on. I've done that before.
Yeah, if your laptop has that little switch where you can turn the wireless on and off, a lot of people accidentally flip that switch and don't realize their wireless is turned off, too. So Robert's point is very good. Make sure that you actually have a wireless card that's awake.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you so much.
Of course, and thanks for calling, and the love is flowing both ways, Grace.
Oh, it's never ending.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that opens up a phone line, 602-277-5827. We'll be back right after this. If you've not heard of cloud computing, I can almost guarantee most of you listening, you're actually engaging in cloud computing right now. If you want to learn more about it, we've posted lots and lots of resources at our website, datadoctors.com/radio. Included in there is Taylor's Future Watch segment, our link from Dawn about what to do if your BlackBerry gets wet, and a new thing that we're going to start doing is asking a poll question every week. And this week's poll question is, do we really need legislation for texting while driving?
We shouldn't even be doing it.
Do we need to create a law that says if you're texting while you're driving, it's illegal, you're gonna get fined, you're gonna get a ticket?
We shouldn't have to. I mean, it should just be something that's automatic.
And if we do have to, then how about the GPS, the navigation system? I see that as just as distracting as text, right?
Well, I thought the seatbelt law was ridiculous because I thought that was your own choice. You know, if you want to go through the windshield.
No, not necessarily, because there's people that, you know, didn't wear seatbelts and they were killing other people because when they got in accidents, they were flying around the car and landing on other people.
Yeah, and that's
so
true.
That's probably.
Well, and that one's a little easier. It's pretty black and white. I'm texting. So somebody has their phone in their hand. Are they texting or are they using the phone?
Right.
No, I had a friend that was driving
in a rental car texting on his iPhone and then got into an accident, and then his phone went through the window.
Well, that okay, but that's
so that's a projectile.
Right, but that serves him right. What I'm saying is, where does this end? How about those two-fisted eaters and drinkers while they're driving?
Yeah. No shaving.
What about putting on makeup?
Yeah, shaving, putting on makeup.
Eating, you know, it's just all.
It's like, dude, I got to go to dumb driver school. I got busted for a TUI.
TUI.
Can we just, we could just have a two hands on the steering wheel law.
But how do you distinguish if they're texting anyway?
That's my question.
I mean, if you're holding a phone, you're going to get blamed for texting.
It's a smartphone. You're automatically texting. Are you?
It'd be
On an iPhone, pulling up somebody's contact information just to get to the point where you can call them.
Sure.
That's very similar to texting, right? You got to go through this same process.
Yeah, so if you're not using voice dialing.
It'd be holding the phone while driving, pretty much.
Exactly. Anyway, if you want to chime in, that poll question is also part of the resources there at datadoctors.com/radio. Ed, looks like you're going to be it for the show here. You've got some kind of crazy stuff going on with your computer, right?
Oh, yes, sir.
Tell me what happened.
Well, I was on the web checking out that healthcare bill, and I was flipping through the documents, and all of a sudden I got an alarm, and my screen came on that my system had been pirated, and then another alarm went off, and then it says your files are being compromised. Then the hard drive started making noise like it was trying to climb out of the cabinet, and the whole thing ended up shorting out. And
that sounds like the government's here to help you, doesn't it?
I think they're trying to make a little additional coin to pay for that health care bill.
Yes, we can.
Wow. Well, I'm not aware. Now, it sounds like you had multiple issues here. One, it sounds like you got infected with what's called Smit fraud, which are these fake antivirus, fake programs that try to convince you that you're infected and try to trick you into buying something that's supposedly going to fix it, right?
Uh-huh.
All they're trying to do is get some money out of you, or in some cases steal your credit card information so they can go and have some fun with it. I'm not aware of a single piece of code out there that can cause physical damage to hardware like that. I mean, there are some real remote possibilities with what's called a BIOS and what have you, but for it, if your hard drive started making noise and went nuts on you,
yeah,
that sounded like a mechanical failure, and just based on that short little description, likely it was coincidental that those things happened. So, you know, without really being able to examine the entrails, I really couldn't tell you exactly what happened. But I can tell you with a very, very high level of confidence that even if you got infected with something, I'm not aware of any of them that would go and, say, destroy the hard drive. Because today's malware, today's viruses, they want to use your machine as a carrier. They want to continue to spread themselves. So if they kill your hard drive, end of story, right?
I would say so, yeah.
No spread. So that's why most of them don't do anything. None of them do anything to harm your system, because they want to use your system.
Yeah, the computer totally locked me out. I had no control over it, and all I could do was sit there and watch it. And by the time I reached for the plug, it blew itself up.
So, I mean, you know, that's one of those things. You'll have to have somebody that really understands how to look at this thing on kind of a forensic level to figure out, you know, what the heck happened.
My question is, the system's 3 years old, and I've really enjoyed it. Do I look at... go ahead and change the power supply and put a new hard drive in, or I just go ahead?
That's really hard to say. I mean, that's one of those things where what we do in our stores, we like to actually examine everything, right? Look at the actual quality and the age of the things, really determine what the issue is, right?
Uh-huh.
Then make a decision as opposed to, well, I'll just go ahead and fix it. Or, you know, a lot of people on an older machine, they say, well, I just want to put more memory in it. And unfortunately, certain components on older systems, like especially like RAM, memory, if it's really old, it's really hard to get memory. It is ridiculously expensive for that particular component versus one that was maybe a year younger than that, right? Where it uses a more common type of memory. So until we see exactly which components have failed and how expensive they are and whether it's worthwhile, it's really hard to say.
Uh-huh.
I will tell you, generally at 3 years, it's still in that area where it probably makes sense to at least consider a repair. Now, if you're having to reinstall an operating system and go through a bunch of stuff and noise, and probably not. But if it turns out that you didn't have mechanical failures and you don't have to replace a lot of different things and you don't have to reload Windows, then it might make perfect sense to repair it.
All right.
Yeah, it's really hard to say. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
I'm really in the dark. I'm not too computer literate, but
well, the way we like to do business is do an evaluation for you and tell you what we believe is the best course of action, based on exactly what's going on in your machine.
All right.
As opposed to trying to guess without really knowing what all the parts are. Now, we can make an educated guess from some basic symptoms. But if you really want us to dig into it to really understand what's going on, then that's the way we prefer to do it. And then once we see it, give you an evaluation. It's like a doctor. We give you a diagnosis.
All right, then.
All right.
Thank you for your help.
You bet. Thank you for calling in. And that's going to wrap up the phone calls. In fact, it's going to wrap up the show. It is the Cloud Computing edition of the Computer Corner. We will edit the audio on this and get it posted up in iTunes and our podcasts and all the other different things that are going on. Please, if you get a chance, visit datadoctors.com/radio so you can see all the stuff that we've posted from today's show. Lewis,
hey.
MacMediaInc.com, right?
You got it. You got it memorized.
Any kind of Mac problems? Taylor, thanks for the Future Watch segment.
Quite welcome.
Robert, thanks for the Geek Speak and the other inputs there. If you want to interface with us during the week, it is datadoctors.com. And while you're there, go to the free help section and sign up for the newsletter. See you all next week.
And now we're fans of